As far as my increasingly failing memory is can gather, the last time I was at a home program in Chicago was just after I had come back from India. And at that home program, I shared something with you that we had done while we were together in India, in our GBC meeting in India. So, for those of you that don't live in Naperville, that's where the program was. I'll just do a refresh. We spent 4 days, morning till night. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness does not have a successor acharya. Srila Prabhupada was the founder acharya. And commonly, a substantial spiritual leader will name a successor acharya. Srila Prabhupada didn't do that. He didn't do that following his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who said that following him, a group of leading Vaishnavas should gather together and collectively carry forward what he had established, the Gaudiya mission. They didn't do that. Instead, historically, what happened was they liked the successor acharya model, and so they elected one amongst them as the successor acharya. But you know what happens. There was another group that said, no, we like this acharya instead of that acharya. And things split into two. And after it split into two, it split into many. And the work, the life of taking the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, pure devotional service, and offering the opportunity to many, many, that also subsided. Instead of that, it was who was in charge of which temples, and territory consciousness took over. So seeing that, Srila Prabhupada, when we were like still in the crib, like that child, Gugu Gaga, we were just little bhaktas, and he was explaining to us what he wanted to continue the International Society for Krishna Consciousness following his departure. There is ample record. In fact, one of our scholarly devotees, who was also one of Srila Prabhupada's personal servants, Hari Sori Prabhu, has so far compiled a text that's 186 pages and counting, which traces, even before Srila Prabhupada left India, his statements, his vision of that model. Not the single acharya model, but he called it the governing body commission. And then, following what's done in the world, he gave it an acronym, GBC. And to show us what he wanted, in 1975, Srila Prabhupada left this world in 1977. So in 1975, he sat in Mayapur. He taught the devotees what the Robert's Rules of Order were, in parliamentary procedure. And when it came time for votes, he raised his hand like everybody else. And he signed the corporate minutes book. And so forth. And those minutes were filed with the officers of the West Bengal government to, like, you know, this is our procedures. And following the course from 1975 through, let's say, about 2008, 2007 or 2008, it was successful. That is to say, in 1977, Srila Prabhupada left this world, November 1977, because he had so strongly put in place, starting in 1972, a model that would carry on after his departure. And it was successful. But that model had become one where each governing body commissioner would have a geographic area, and they looked very nicely after that geographic area, but there were global concerns that just not one geographic area would be looking after. So in 2007, what had happened was some of the most senior members of Srila Prabhupada's initiated disciples who were GBC members, they departed this world. Tamal Krishna Maharaj departed this world. Sridhar Swami departed this world. Bhakti Tirtha Swami departed this world. So we started looking around and saying, we better start thinking about what's going to be put in place today so that when we're gone, the global vision of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness continues. Because otherwise we'll have, I don't know if you're familiar with your American history, but there was an issue of states' rights versus federal rights. And there was a war, a civil war over that issue, which was, you know, was it a confederation of states, and we just agree that we're going to cooperate together? Or there's a federal government under which the states, they can't pass laws that contradict the federal government. There was a war over it. And the second one won. So there's a federal government in which there are many states, and the states have state laws, and the federal government is overarching federal laws. It doesn't matter what state you're in. If you're flying in an airplane, there's laws. And if you violate those laws, it's a federal violation, and you have a problem, not with the state, but with the federal government. Just because it has beyond state boundaries. So similarly, there are issues within our International Society for Krishna Consciousness that have very broad purposes. And so starting in 2007 and 2008 and so forth, we started holding a second meeting that hadn't been going on prior to that, 20-some years, whatever the number is, 32 years. We just had an annual meeting. We have an acronym for that one too, an AGM. By law, an annual general meeting. You have to have an election of officers in your business, and we filed resolutions with the West Bengal government, abiding by the laws of the government. But then there's these global issues, and so we started meeting an additional meeting to discuss global issues. And it was very nice, and it's going on. It's still very nice. There's some, like Prabhupada said way back when, we should have a constitution. Now we're operating. We do things and pass laws and pay attention to some of them, and don't pay attention to enough of them. And they're good, things that are valuable. But a constitution was something we didn't have. So there's a group that's working on constitution. Anyone care to join the committee that's drafting a constitution for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? It's not just GBC members. So they've been working on that for 4 or 5 years and refining it and refining it and refining it. Different things. Succession of leaders. That's another committee. So what's our plan today for what's the leadership going to be tomorrow. Any good organization does that without detailing. So what's our plan? Another one is outreach, taking the message and giving it to others. So that's been through many different generations or stages. I was with that group first, and our first thought was, as we expand, we have a nice plan to expand the numbers of persons that are practicing bhakti yoga, pure devotional service. We have to take care of them. So let's make a nice plan to take care of them first, before we invite people. So that spun off into a devotee care group. And that's like the biggest group. They're really active and they have a really good time. They do lots of nice things, travel around and communicate all year long and thinking about caring for the devotees that we have. Then, I hope you don't mind me sharing some of these things with you. Because here's something. One of our members of the Succession of Leaders Committee, his name is Jaya Krishna Das. Jaya Krishna Das was the president of the Bhaktivedanta College in Radhadesh in Belgium that has affiliation with the University of something, not Oxford, Cambridge, but one of those well-named universities in England, and they're an affiliate. The degree that they offer is recognized by that university. It has affiliation with that university in the field of Vaishnava studies. So they have a three-year course and they get a bachelor's degree in Vaishnava studies recognized by this university. He was the president of that college and helped develop and expand it so they can now have more members and so forth. He's now our temple president. He felt like I did my service there. And he's taking a three-year service in New Vrindavan as the temple president in New Vrindavan. Yay! So if you've ever been to the farm community and the Palace of Gold in New Vrindavan, you'll know who the name of the president is. Jaya Krishna Das. He's also the chairman, because he's so good in organizing and education and succession of leaders. So recently we had a Festival of Inspiration. Some of you heard that before. It's like 3 days of around Mother's Day weekend every year. Bringing different speakers, you know, whole series of topics all day long for 3 days. So he had one session. He shared this with me. One session on succession of leaders. And he thought, maybe a handful of people will come. Probably not very many people are interested. And he was very surprised. 35, 40 people came. And there were two feedback things that he heard from them. One was, we're really interested. How can we get more involved? Just by telling people there's an opportunity to get involved. You know, we're full-time. We have jobs and families. And we can't be full-time, but we'd like to be involved in helping ISKCON and your movement. Please explain, you know, they were eager to learn. The second feedback he got is, wow, we didn't know that you were doing this and that and that and the other thing and the other thing and, you know, more communication, please, of all these nice things that you're doing. So that's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. Is, oh, I didn't know you had all that stuff going on. Another committee that was formed was the unique position of Srila Prabhupada as our founder acharya. Just like, not exactly like, but very similar to, in the Sri Sampradaya, there's a very unique position that Ramanujacharya has over so many generations. Or in the Madhva Sampradaya, Madhvacharya has over so many generations. To this day, when you visit Udupi or when you visit Sri Rangam, you feel the presence of those personalities. So Srila Prabhupada is not in that position exactly. He's not the principal acharya of our sampradaya, but uniquely empowered, and so for many, many generations to come, his position will be unique. How to properly, not improperly, but properly preserve that and express that. So some very senior members of our society are taking that topic and massaging the topic and producing things to help preserve the legacy of Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya. Nice service. Then another one is, because we don't have a single acharya successor model, we have a governing body commission model of governance of the society, we have that kind of authority. And here's another line of authority that is following Srila Prabhupada. There are some number, some 50-something initiating spiritual masters within ISKCON. So we have this spiritual authority and we have this ultimate managing authority. So there's parallel lines of authority, which is nice, but it can also be confusing if it's not clear what's what. Sometimes it happens. And it can happen up this level, it can happen at this level, and it can happen this level. So clarity on what's called the parallel lines of authority. We must recognize the spiritual authority that a spiritual master has. And the disciples should regard their spiritual master in a very special way. Then there's this other line of authority that our founder Acharya said, this is the ultimate managing authority for the whole of ISKCON. So these people over here have to respect these people over here. There's a term in Srimad Bhagavatam called Brahmacharya, where Swayambhuva Manu has Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akuti. He has three daughters and two sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapada. So the eldest of his daughters, Devahuti, was given the privilege of selecting her husband. So she told her father, someone she's never met, Kardama Muni. I'd like to marry Kardama Muni. So Swayambhuva Manu went into the forest and found Kardama Muni. Kardama Muni is a very qualified brahmana. So qualified, in the forest, in fixed in meditation upon the personality of Godhead, the personality of Godhead came and visited him, appeared before him, and blessed him, saying that you are so dear to me that you will marry and one of your offspring will be me. The personality of Godhead will appear as your son, Kapiladeva. So he already knew before he was married what was going to happen, because the Lord told him what would happen. And here comes Swayambhuva Manu. He's Manu. He's also an incarnation of the categories of avatars. He's one, Manvantara avatar. He's the first of the Manus. And he's come to see Kardama Muni. So Kardama Muni offers him all respect. He's the brahmana offering the kshatriya all respect, because he's Manu. He's the king. He's the emperor. So you've come all the way here to the forest, he said, to see me. There must be some reason that you've come. And the answer is yes. Before you even ask, whatever it is, the answer is yes. That's courtesy. And he glorifies the position of a qualified king. And the qualified king, Swayambhuva Manu, he is offering glories to the qualified Brahmana. And Prabhupada in this context says, this is Brahmakarya. When the Brahmanas are qualified and they're not proud, they have deep respect for the Kshatriyas who are qualified, and the Kshatriyas who are qualified are not proud, and they have deep respect for the Brahmanas. This is Brahmakarya. This is when there is peaceful existence in society. You don't have that, you have the other kind of society, the turbulent kind. So this parallel lines of authority committee is another group of very esteemed, brilliant persons, and they're moving very carefully. They don't want to have something that leaks, that has holes in it, something that's going to endure beyond our lifetime. Because the idea is not there's a problem, we have to fix the problem. The idea is to leave something behind us so the next generation, that's all of you and whoever else in the world of ISKCON, has something that's going to preserve and protect this wonderful gift that Srila Prabhupada gave us, this worldwide association of devotees. It's unique. So the way that we conduct our meetings, there's other groups, you know, like 7-8 other groups doing different things. And you meet twice a year now. 4 days. One of the groups is team building. Because, you know, this GBC can be very good. That GBC can be very good. And each of the GBCs may be very good, but how do they work together for the world? It takes teams. So, respecting one another's qualities and working, because leaders might, you know, be dissonant. So how to be cooperative, and in Kali Yuga that's a major challenge. In the age of quarrel, to be cooperative. Be a leader and be cooperative with other leaders. So that's one of, so we have 4 days and then 4 days. Just recently we invited an extra 75 people. It was already many besides our GBC members. The person that's leading this exercise of planning our future had an inspiration. Anyway, and I'll share the inspiration. He was on a plane going to India, and it happened that sitting next to him on the plane was a person that this is what he does, is he works with strategic planning with corporations. So they got into a conversation, and he said, you know, I'm going to India to work on strategic planning for a worldwide spiritual organization. And the man's interest was perked. He said, oh, that's what I do. He said, oh, really, that's what you do. Well, let me tell you, what I'm finding is it's going, but it's going slowly, like too slowly. So they shared, and he said, I think what you need, after hearing what you said, I think you need more participation, because you have people that they're doing the maximum they can do. They can't so much do more. You need to have people that aren't doing all the, what they're doing. Just like involve more people. So it became, you know, 75. Just some number came 75. We had 75 people extra come to our meeting in Juhu, in Bombay. And then another 75 came to our meeting in Mayapur, in India, West Bengal. So now the next one is all the temple presidents in the whole world are invited to come and participate in what we're doing, learn what we're doing, and, you know, like resonate, vibrate, and make it happen. Help us make it happen. At least be aware of what's happening and participate as much as you'd like. And take home with you, take it back with you to your local situation. So it's gaining some momentum. It's nice. So that's just background on what I plan to do this evening. Because we have, at our meetings, we have first, for 10-15 minutes, we have kirtan. There's a murti of Srila Prabhupada, and we have kirtan before his murti. And then we go sit down at our position around the circular table. And then the facilitator says, we're going to hear from Srila Prabhupada, and I want it to be, don't shuffle papers, don't no side conversations, quiet, so you can hear a pin drop, because we're going to hear, so one of the members of that little steering committee had gone through the exercise, Lakshmi Moni had gone through the exercise of gathering letters or conversations or some instructions to his leaders how to be good leaders in different, under different headings, different categories. So the one that we read last time I was here was cooperation. So I'm going to read different heading this evening. And so what I'd like you to do, like get in the mood of, there's, you're in the presence of one person who has done something that's very unique in the whole history of religion. In a matter of a decade, all over the world, he took a major religious teaching, a teaching of pure devotion, no fruitive, no karma, no speculative knowledge, just pure devotion, and took that and made it manifest all around the world. And you are an assembly of persons who, that a great acharya wishes to carry this message forward. And he's giving important instructions to those who he is entrusting that responsibility to. Because these are these persons that Prabhupada was addressing were different leaders like that. So imagine that being the situation. And okay. This headline is something you wouldn't expect, maybe, from a spiritual leader. At least the language of the heading is different. We could say compassion. That's something you would expect. But compassion is not just a feeling, it's an action. And action that actually is effective. Compassionate acts that have an effective result. The effective result is that more devotees, happier devotees. That's our sutra. More devotees, happier devotees in this world. More persons that are resonating with pure devotional service to Krishna. And they're very happy. So the language, because of the person that's done this, Gopal Bhatta Prabhu is the individual who's leading us, and he likes this term, results orientation. He's a very successful person in the business world, and he said he's going to write a book before he dies, The Entrepreneurial Srila Prabhupada. not in the sense of business, but in the sense of taking risk to achieve something. What Prabhupada wanted was more devotees, happier devotees. So to do this task of more devotees, happier devotees, that's challenging in this age of Kali. There's risks to be taken. I'll share, before I begin reading this, I'll share another little story. We just had our North American, as we do this global, we have also North American meetings, which just happened last week. And the very beginning, instead of having a keynote speaker, we decided we would have the disciples of Srila Prabhupada who were there. There were like 12, 13 of us. In a circle, we sat with the others, and each of us were given 5 minutes to express something in our relationship with Srila Prabhupada, something he said or did that really inspired us. So one of the first persons to speak was Praharana Mataji. She's Prabhupada's disciple who just is really good organizer and kind of in the background organizer. And then the sannyasi is the GBC, Bhakti Marg Swami, who likes doing dramas and has fun, and she does all the hard work. But she likes that. She likes Maharaj, spiritually enlivening people, and she can just make sure that the requirements get done. So she was sharing that she was a young woman in the 60s when Srila Prabhupada visited Toronto. And they had a rented house. I visited that rented house. It's modest. Wasn't at all large. It wasn't in a prominent location. It was something they could afford when they had next to nothing. That was the Toronto Temple. And the temple president at that time had a big vision. He wanted a prominent temple for Prabhupada. And so he was looking around the city of Toronto, and he found an empty church for sale. The place where it is, the Toronto Temple today. It's like big stone building on a prominent thoroughfare right through Toronto. And so Prabhupada came to visit Toronto and took a look at the church and asked them how much it was. And the figure was given and asked, how much do you have? And it was like, handful of change, Prabhupada. And at that time, they didn't have a congregation. The concept of congregation just didn't exist at that time. We were so new. We were just like young people that would go out on the street and have kirtan and give people invitations to the temple. And here's a Back to Godhead magazine and chant and be happy. That was what we did. So there wasn't the opportunity for what they have now. They have a huge congregation that could have... Anyway, so they had a couple of supporters, some people that had a little job here and a little job there, and they were willing to sacrifice whatever they earned so they could get that church. And Prabhupada sat with them, and they were enthusiastic. He sensed their enthusiasm. And then he spoke something that Praharana said has stayed with her to this day. It was a life-transforming expression or exchange with Prabhupada. And he said, nothing is gained without some, I don't know the exact word, but something like some difficulty or some anxiety, something like that. You can't achieve anything in this world without some measure of anxiety. So, endeavor. So, it was a risk, but his words empowered them. Go forward. So somehow, here and there and elsewhere, they gathered up enough to make a down payment. The church, because they didn't have any credit rating. The church gave them the mortgage, paid them, something like that. And that they now, you know, it took years to renovate, but it's now nicely renovated inside. They have a Govinda's restaurant right in the property, and so on and so on. And now they're doing so many other things outside the temple. But it was a nice thing to hear at the very beginning of our meeting in New Vrindavan, because the spirit of trying to make some sacrifice of oneself to bring spiritual well-being into society in general, at some risk, but seeing a nice result. And as a result, by this nice temple, so many people will come to hear about Krishna, see the deity form of the Lord. Let us do this. So they did it. So here's, on that same note, here's Srila Prabhupada speaking. And it's actually a lecture from Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 verses 1 through 5 given in Los Angeles in 1968. Just sections from one lecture. Prabhupada speaking. Palena parachiyate. By the result, one has to be judged how far he has advanced. Similarly, there are so many persons, they are meditating. What meditating? What is their character? If you challenge their character, nonsense. So these sorts of things will not help. Come practically forward. Just like our students going door to door, chanting Hare Krishna. And people are taking advantage of it. They are hearing. So this process is beneficial to the public. Even a small child who joins here, he also claps, tries to clap. So, plays the drum. He tries to play the drum. So this Krishna consciousness movement is not to remain in a secluded place to get cheap advertisement. Oh, that man is meditating. No. Go. Practically work. Just like Lord Jesus Christ, he practically worked. So there is practical work. No question of going into a secluded place. We should remain in the congested city and preach this Krishna consciousness movement. General people understand that retiring from ordinary duties, one becomes spiritually advanced. That is being taught here. It is not like that. Krishna taught to the whole world that Arjuna was a soldier. He was a fighter. And in his fighting also, he can be Krishna conscious. It is not that he has to cease from fighting and then become Krishna conscious. No. There is no such question. There is no rejection of anything, but dovetailing everything. That is the process. Do everything, but in Krishna consciousness. If you are a fighter, fight for Krishna. If you are a businessman, all right, do business for Krishna. If you are something else, do that, but for Krishna. This is wanted. This is called Krishna consciousness. Real renunciation is to dovetail everything for Krishna. That is renunciation. Not renunciation that I earn whole time millions of dollars and distribute amongst my children. And are all engaged in some other way and I become Krishna conscious in a secluded place. No. You can begin Krishna consciousness from the very beginning. Earn for Krishna, spend for Krishna. Think for Krishna, work for Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Fight for Krishna. Nothing to be rejected. Everything to be dovetailed with Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. If you simply engage yourself in activities of Krishna consciousness, then automatically your activities of Maya will become silent. Palena parachiyate. One has to be judged by the result. You have worked very hard and supposed to be a very rich man, but I see that you have no nice apartment, neither any car, neither any opulence. So what kind of businessman you have earned? That can be understood immediately. So if one, by practice of meditation, is actually advancing in spiritual life, why he's materially affected? What is the difference between a person materially affected and spiritually advanced? It is not inertia. I shall go and sit down, eat at the expense of others, and chant Hare Krishna. No. This is karma yoga, pranayar, artayar, dhyā, vācā. You have to employ your life, your money, your words, and your intelligence all for Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. If you have got enough money, spend it for Krishna. Don't stock it. The more you spend, more your balance, more you become balanceless for spending Krishna. Then more you are benefited. This is the process. This is the kind of advancement is just like Arjuna. He sacrificed his whole family for Krishna. In the beginning he hesitated. How can I kill my family members this fight? And then he became Krishna conscious. Never mind. I shall kill all of them. This is called sacrifice. This is Krishna consciousness. He sacrificed all sentiments, all connection, everything for Krishna. That is called sannyas, real sannyas. Although he was a warrior, a fighter, a householder, having more than several wives, but he was sannyas because he sacrificed everything for Krishna. That is wanted. That is Krishna consciousness. So everything can test how far he has advanced simply by this. How far I have become prepared to sacrifice everything for Krishna. He doesn't require to take certificate from others. He can test himself. How far I am prepared. Then it is all right. This is the standard. There's a little bit more, but one of the other speakers, I shared this at our morning class at the temple. One of the other Prabhupada disciples who was present in Vrindavan, his name is Dharma Das, Prabhupada disciple, and he's the head pujari in our Miami temple for 30-something years, very dedicated pujari, and he was there representing the Miami temple, and when he was sharing something that transformed his life, he shared as follows, that he had joined the Hare Krishna movement in Gainesville at the University of Florida. There was a center, and apparently he was a student, and that's where he first contacted devotees and began practicing. And by 1972, he was initiated, and during that period of time, something that all of us were doing was what I told you what the devotees in Toronto were doing. Going in the public, chanting Hare Krishna, inviting people to the temple, distributing Back to Godhead magazines. So Dharma said, his experience was, he was always, as far as quantity of literature is distributed, he was always last. And he wasn't just last in Gainesville, he was last in the whole country. And it just went on, week after week and month after month, and he started feeling badly that, how can I please my spiritual master? I'm always last. I can't do this like other people do this. And then it wasn't just, how am I pleasing my spiritual master? He started feeling feelings of envy towards those that were doing nicely. And he knew that that wasn't the right feeling to have. So he wrote to Srila Prabhupada about it. He wrote one letter, and he got one letter back. I didn't write even one letter, so I didn't get one back either. But he has the one letter. And he expressed what I just shared with you, And then, so he gave us the background, and then he referenced what Prabhupada said in return. I sent that out to a number of devotees. Maybe some of you here have received that. Dharma is one of the gentlest persons you'd ever meet. Like, not just a gentleman, he's a perfect gentleman, but just his nature is very soft and gentle. So Prabhupada's reply was similar, very soft and very kind. Rather than saying, this isn't good, Prabhupada took that feeling and turned it into transcendence. He said, rather than feeling this other feeling, you can think with that same spirit, oh, these devotees who are doing so nicely are praising Krishna so much. Isn't that nice? And elsewhere Prabhupada would describe that this is Vaikuntha, or this is Vrindavan, where if one gopi is pleasing Krishna, they're not feeling envy. They're feeling, oh, Krishna's been pleased. How nice. They're celebrating. Somebody's pleasing Krishna so nicely, because the goal is pleasing Krishna. Then he gave an example that made me think of what we just read. Prabhupada said, just like Kolavachar Sridhar. So at 1972, we didn't know who that was, but he just referenced, it's a disciple, a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was very, very poor. He was a Vaishya, and his merchandise was plantain leaves and plantain cups, because he lived in a plantain grove. So he climbed up the tree and took some leaves and stitched them together and made plates or made cups. He sat by the side of the Ganges with a little cloth, and some people would take some and leave some little money, and that was his livelihood. So he wasn't rich, because you can get plantain leaves with just by climbing up the tree. Banana flowers and leaves of the banana for plates. So, and cups. And at the end of the day, whatever he had, his practice was, he would use 50% of next to nothing to worship the Ganges, and the other 50% would maintain his livelihood. He would purchase other things, whatever they could purchase him. And Prabhupada made reference to that, like comparing Dharma to Kolavachar Sridhar. And although he had very little, it was what he gave. And Prabhupada made the point that Krishna is pleased not just by what you give, but Krishna is looking to see what you're holding back. So because his point was, because you're very sincere and you're trying your best, Krishna is pleased. Whatever your capacity is, you're trying your best. Very similar in Ram's Leela, where they're building the bridge to Lanka, depending on which version of Ramayana you read, is either a spider was or a squirrel kicking little pebbles, and Hanuman said, get out of the way, and Ram said, no, his service is as good as yours, because to his capacity, he's doing. And to me, that's what's pleasing. Same idea. So Prabhupada quoted this with Kolavachar Sridhar and said that you're trying your very best, so please know that Krishna is pleased. He felt very encouraged. I am trying my best. I just don't have this capacity. I don't have the same capacity that other people have. And that's fine. Use your capacity for Krishna. Then Prabhupada goes on. This example given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is very appropriate. In the case of the Gaudiya Math members, one can apply a similar process. There are many disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Maybe I won't read this. Whoops. Okay. As one fans paddy to separate the real paddy from the useless straw, by accepting the criterion recommended by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, one can easily understand who is a genuine world preacher and who is useless. That is, you fan the straw, and is there any grain left? Or is it just straw? And the result of that fanning of the paddy is just the labor that you do, and there's no result. There's no grain. So what's desired, our theme for our whole of strategic planning is more devotees, happier devotees. More devotees doesn't mean just like, you know, grow as an organization. It's compassion. That is, that opportunity should be provided for persons who just don't know what the principles of Dharma are, and how to approach God in a loving mood, simply serve Him, and give the opportunity. I can say just from my own experience as a young person growing up not in Krishna consciousness, I grew up in a religious family, and when I was young, we learned the principle. Before we ate our meal, we said a prayer. We called saying grace. And saying grace is a little prayer that we recited together aloud. And the prayer basically was thank you. And when I contacted Krishna consciousness, it wasn't just say thank you. That's nice to say thank you. But thank you, God. But devotion means whatever it is we have, it belongs to God. And we take the fruits of our work, which belong to God, and we go to the marketplace and we buy things to be offered to God, and then we prepare those to be offered to God, and we offer them to God. And then we take the prasad. And we also say a prayer. But that prayer is just it's far more than saying thank you. It's part of a whole network of activities that's an expression of our wish to serve the personality of Godhead and to receive His mercy. The mercy in the form of specifically the opportunity to serve Him. That the translation that Srila Prabhupada gave of the Hare Krishna mantra was Hare is the vocative of Hara. Just like in Vrindavan, when they want to call Radha's name, they say Radhe, because in the vocative Radha becomes Radhe. And the vocative of Hara, the energy of the Supreme Lord, another name of the internal potency of the Supreme Lord is Hara, in the vocative becomes Hare, O energy of the Lord, Hare. Please engage me in the service of Krishna. So that's the meditation that Prabhupada trained us. We're praying to Krishna, please engage us in His service. So taking of the prasad is a form of service. It's a nice service. But so many other, it's to give us strength, spiritual strength, bala, spiritual strength, so that we can go on serving Krishna. That's the receiving His mercy so that we can go on serving Him. And there's a whole series of other, as mentioned, so that we can honor the prasad of the Supreme Lord. so that we can have the capacity to do our work, so that we have the means to purchase nice things and prepare nice things in nice ways and make nice offering in a clean place and right consciousness for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Patram pushpam palam toyam yove bhaktya prayachati. If we offer even simple things with love and devotion, Krishna will accept. And when Krishna accepts, then that's his mercy that he accepts, and he leaves his mercy, his prasad. Srila Prabhupada taught us that, for example, with deity worship, it's right in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the importance of deity worship is discussed. And Prabhupada writes that deity worship is incomplete without the distribution of prasad. Because you make an offering to the deity, and now you have the prasad. And if it's just you take the prasad and you don't distribute the prasad, it's incomplete. Like there was we had a discussion this afternoon about compassion. And what about the situation where you're maybe feeling quite content about your practice of devotion and not so much thinking about others that may not have prasad or the mercy of the Lord? Well, it's incomplete. And to make it complete, then the distribution of prasad. And that's where the more devotees notion comes in. It's not just like a numerical thing, it's giving the mercy of the Lord to others. All of the great acharyas had that, not just a little bit, they had great compassion. And they extended themselves in a very, very dynamic way to give the opportunity of devotional service and pure devotional service to others. And how is that to continue if that sense of compassion is not vibrant? Then one may be complacent in one's own practice of devotion and not provide the opportunity for others. So this message was prepared to help us sit and think about what do we want the future of this worldwide spiritual organization to be. We want this compassion to be there. And we want the grains of rice to be there after making the endeavor of thrashing the chaff. Because there's rice. In the heart, Lord Chaitanya taught that in the heart of every living being is love of God, but is dormant. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karaye Udoi in Bengali, but the message is Krishna Prema Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. That seed of Krishna Prema is in the heart. Not just spirituality, but specifically Krishna Prema. I'll just share a personal appreciation. I was visiting college campuses during this spring semester, and I was asking the students where I went, how many Chinese students, what's the percentage of Chinese students at your school? And I didn't hear anything below 25%, I mean, Oriental students. How many at UIUC? 10, 15? Or more? Or more? 20%. The demographics of the United States are changing. You know, there are names of places that are French or English names of places and streets and towns and things. But you know that there's now so many non-resident Indians in America, as you all know. The population of Chinese is growing in America. And when will we start to have names of streets and airports and places that are... In Washington, D.C., there's a... They call it the Loop, 495, that goes around Washington. And then at about 10 o'clock, there's Route 70 or 270, whatever it is. They call it something... Alley, like Technical Alley or something like that. High-tech Alley or something like that. And as you go along, there's up on the side, there's a Chase Bank. And just below where it says Chase, it says something in Chinese. In America, on that corridor. I mean, the world population is changing. I mean, the United States demographics are changing because the Chinese population is huge. I mean, I'm from New York, where the population is a lot of people in a small space. But I've, you know, having been to China, and I commented to one Chinese person, we were going to, they wanted me to go to some place in some park, and in Beijing. And my head was spinning, seeing so many people. It was like, I don't know how to compare it. It's like a, like, rush hour in Grand Central Station for like, you know, 3 miles. And it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday in a park. And I commented to the translator, and the translator said, oh, we're used to seeing so many people in China. I rode an airplane from Beijing to Shanghai, and I've never been in a plane that was so big. I mean, you know, international flights, when you take an international flight, there's like two row, you know, there's two aisles, and the middle row has five, and then there's two on this side and two on that side, sometimes three on this side, three on that side, but their middle row is like, you know, 15. And the outer row is like four or five. I couldn't believe it. And it, you know, but that's China. The population is huge. And so I've taken an interest in Chinese people, especially the Chinese students that come here, and you know, because they can help their countrymen. I just at breakfast at lunch was hearing Prabhupada speaking in Chicago, and when he came here to install the Gaurnatai deities for the Radha Damodar buses, and he was specifically saying, he was appealing, help your countrymen become Krishna conscious, help them become free from the sufferings of unnecessary sufferings that comes from fruitive activity in material life, because he had just had a interview with the lieutenant of the Chicago police force on crime in Chicago. It's like the two words go well together, crime and Chicago, from the years of Al Capone and so many other things. So the lieutenant was asking Prabhupada how to reduce crime, and Prabhupada was saying, because you don't have quality people, you don't have first class citizens, then those that are followers, how are they going to become free from their vices? You're going to have crime. You have to have first-class men giving guidance to the rest of society. So, I have an interest in Chinese people. This is the more devotees, not more in numerical, but giving persons an opportunity to hear. And it's really fascinating because they don't have a God concept. It's not part of their language. When they had to translate Bhagavad Gita into Chinese, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, they didn't have a word. Ours is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't have something like that. They don't have a word in their language. So What does that mean? It means words are symbols of something. And if they don't even have a concept, then they're not going to have a word to match the concept. They don't have a concept. And they come here to America, and it's like a kid in a candy shop. You know, they have all these different religions, and they don't know what to do. So it's a great opportunity. If you in your workplace, you find some Chinese people, you know, some people, they're very hardworking, and some just don't care about religion, they care about hard work. But there are some persons that have an interest. And if you're very careful, not, you know, pushy, just give them an opportunity to hear. And you'll find some amazing things that they'll say about what their concept of the Supreme is. And commonly, it's not personal. If they have something, it's not personal. And they're not like unwilling to move from the personal, from the impersonal to personal. But it's an interesting exercise. I'm enjoying it. Because it helps me be very grounded in Krishna bhakti. Like being very clear. God is a person. He has qualities. And how do we know that? How do we justify that? That's the, you know, take the grain and get the rice from the grain, or the wheat from the grain, or from the straw, not just straw. How to create a situation where persons that don't know, that may want to know, get an opportunity to know. And then when you, that opportunity, some person step forward and say, I want to know, then you're prepared to take them slowly, step by step, to the place where they can meet Krishna and feel Krishna's presence in their life through the practices of chanting Hare Krishna. And following some very simple practices, like offering one's food to Krishna. And that means certain things get offered and certain things don't get offered, because it's not offerable. And because it's for Krishna, we offer things that he likes. We don't offer other things, so we don't take other things. It's very simple, practical, and consciousness elevating. That's another word they don't have in Chinese. Consciousness. Have different ideas of what they should use as a Chinese substitute for the word consciousness. But if you spend time with people that don't have a clear understanding, some of your American colleagues at work or at school or wherever, and take them step by step through the understandings of a life of devotion, it's very wonderful. Very wonderful experience. It's not a win-lose kind of dynamic. It's a devotional expression. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Vishnu appears before Lord Brahma every morning. Lord Brahma, he's the creator, and he has his days and nights. And at the end of each day, there's a partial devastation. Part of the universe that he created in the morning is destroyed at night. And he's resting. And in the morning when he wakes, he has to recreate that which was destroyed, the partial devastation. But before he just like goes off to the office and starts his work, he does some sadhana in the morning. He offers prayers to the Lord. And he undergoes some austerity, control of his mind and senses, and the Lord appears. And there's this wonderful dialogue between Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma at the beginning of his morning, and Lord Vishnu is describing what I'm just describing, paraphrasing in a simple way, but he's describing that by your describing my glories, I who am of an absolute nature, I who have spiritual qualities but no material qualities, by fixing your mind upon these and describing these in wonderful prayers, you become fully purified. So now you're qualified to do this very difficult task of creation. Although you've done it many times, so this applies to us, although we may do something many times, we may become mechanical or kind of routine-ish and just do things absent-mindedly, but we should not do things routine-ish and mechanical and absent-mindedly. We should do them devotionally, with very clear presence of offering something to the personality of Godhead and feeling dependent upon him for the capacity to do so. Not only the ingredients to do so, but the capacity to do so. And that's the plane of Krishna consciousness. The increasing that in the world is the greatest charity, the greatest act of compassion. And we want to see it practically manifest. That's what these series of quotes were describing. Prabhupada was encouraging way back in 1972 that his young disciples take that into their hearts and grow it. And that's what I'm doing with you also. Take that message and cultivate it. Whatever your position may be, take that within an instruction. This is something that comes in that section of the third canto Bhagavatam also. Within an instruction comes the full empowerment to carry out the instruction. The capacity to fulfill an instruction from Krishna or Krishna's representative is within the instruction itself. We don't need something outside of ourselves. We just need to take shelter of that spirit, like, fix your mind upon me, manmana. The mind is all over the place. Just sit and chant for a little bit and see what happens. The mind's all over the place. But the capacity is within the instruction. If we take the instruction to heart, the capacity is there. We just have to qualify ourselves to receive that capacity. And then the result will be there. Okay, so any discussion or questions anybody wants to bring up? Yes.
You mentioned that back in the 70s, early Islam movement, how devotees used to go out and perform kirtan and meet people and distribute some bhakti dollars and invite the temple. It seems like a lot of people became serious and they took it and they became devotees or at least kind of attracted Krishna consciousness. Nowadays we have more advanced in electronic media and everything. We can reach out to more people, but proportionately we see that it's not the same. What is the missing thing?
A lot. The audience that Srila Prabhupada was addressing at that time were unmarried counterculture youth. Counterculture meaning those specifically that were rejecting the values of the existing culture. Then there was like a pushback. The pendulum was swinging over that side. So those persons didn't have their worldly responsibilities. They were thinking otherworldly, and Prabhupada engaged that. But so the present situation is, and could you just lean that way so I can see? Right, little eye contact. There we go. Okay. We took the topic that you're just bringing up, and in our meeting in New Vrindavan, it started with an idea to talk about it for an hour and a half, and I said, I think we need some more time. It was 2.5. We ended up speaking about it for 5 hours and decided we need to speak about this at every meeting. And we need to have regional meetings where we discuss this and related things. Not just specifically what it was then and what it is today, but more specifically, how to deal with reaching out to different communities of people, different persons of different natures that have an interest, but what their needs and their interests are different, and how to effectively reach different audiences. Obviously, look around the room, and there's a predominant audience here. Family people from of Indian background. This is not the only. There's a few exceptions of us in the room. But, you know, the rest of the population of Chicago or Illinois is not well represented here in this room. So how do we reach that audience? And some of these ideas, you know, were how to, what's missing. Part of it is the commitment to do so. Just like, you know, do you mind if I share what you shared with me? So you had, in a dream, some inspiration that you should go distribute books. I can share that. And so you woke up in the morning and said, I'm going to go distribute books. And you didn't know where to go. But you picked a place to go, and voila, some books are distributed. Just because there was that inspiration. It wasn't so much someone said, but you know, so now in the Chicago temple, you go up the staircase and down the staircase and the left side and the right side, and you see all these messages from Srila Prabhupada, how important he considered book distribution. And Harinam. So we have nice Harinam in the temple, but we need to have nice Harinam around town. And more. So there's ideas. One of the things that happens when there's a commitment to do something is facilities start to come that you didn't even see before, or didn't even imagine before. Maybe they weren't even there before, but when there's a commitment, you've seen that sign that's on my door in my office in New York about commitment. I'll send it to you. I made a little like flyer on commitment. It's written by Goethe, a German author of some kind. When there's hesitation, the mind rules. And when there's commitment, then Providence, with a capital P, the Supreme, reciprocates, and all kinds of opportunities that were just not there before come when there's commitment. So that's one of the biggest things that's missing, is the commitment to do so. That this is a desire of our founder Acharya, And it was based on compassion. He wanted them, you know, suffering has as its root cause ignorance. So if there's knowledge instead of ignorance, then at least there's an opportunity to diminish suffering. So feeling compassion, he provided the knowledge and asked his followers, give people this knowledge. And so he did. And so things started to happen. And persons that aren't prepared to read the knowledge, then give them the holy name and prasadam. So he did that. There was commitment. We had the freedom. We weren't, you know, didn't have our careers and didn't, you know, we were young and full of energy. So there are different ways to do that when you're married and you have responsibilities. That can also be done. The way of expression will be different, but quantity-wise, magnitude-wise, it can also be very significant. But it takes commitment without neglect of the other commitments. But it's part of the life, of transcendental life. Vidya vadhu jivanam. That's Sankirtan. Anandam buddhivardhanam. It brings great happiness, that ocean of happiness. We all want happiness. So, I'll share a thought that I've been having for some time. Time is ripe in America today, where young people are seeking spirituality like they weren't before. Before it was the me generation. I have some name for it, I don't know what they call it. But, you know, security, job, stability. If there's spirituality, it's, you know, on the side somewhere. It's just because it's nice. But, you know, my main thing is this thing. Now it's very different. As I mentioned in this presentation, social activism, it's a buzz. I want to make a difference. I want to be part of that which is going to make this world a better place. And seeking spirituality. They don't have a clue what and where and how, but seeking spirituality. So, something that I feel is needed, like a wave, surfs up, the waves are up, get out your surfboard, here it comes. A wave that says spirituality in America amongst young people. Older people too, but especially young people, because they don't have all the attachments and so on. So I feel it's very important to gather together some young people that can help bring in those young people. And by that example, those that are seated here in the room with us will see that really nice example and will be inspired and make, you know, participate with them or make sacrifices themselves to, in their own way, participate. Now, it doesn't have to be with that young example, but why not? Then it's, you know, the wedding of the two or the resonating of the two. I've a very strong desire to see that happen. And I see that Krishna is over here and over there. He's sending some possible resources to make that happen. And wow. Like attracts like. Look around the room. Like attracts like. And the young Americans will attract other young Americans, and you know, it'll be fantastic. The opportunities for all those nice things. And just give them the freedom to do it in a more protected situation than we had when we were young, because we didn't have, you know, we didn't know from day to day what was going to happen. We were just like enthusiastic. But if there's now a stable atmosphere in which to grow that, wow. And it's not based upon complacency or survival, it's based upon devotion. Wow. It's going to be very powerful. I've over-answered your question, but... More? Yes.
Why do you think that way that, you know, people are ready for that? What is the reason?
Experience. The last two, for example, I mean, so many examples. But for example, last time I was at Champaign-Urbana, and where's Rajiv, by the way? Okay. It was one of those same, you know, it's just a generic presentation on something. I think it was like a, I can't remember what the topic was, but it wasn't like, after the presentation, four young people came up. This is an example, the grain of rice in the pot, and I can give you, you know, 10 other examples. One fellow was very eager to ask a question. His question was, I'm really seeking spiritual life. How do I get guidance in going further in spiritual life? And then another said, me too. And he said, but I'm doing this type of meditation and I'm realizing through my meditation that there's this other consciousness, this other experience, but I can't stay there. What do I do to stay there? And then another, a third person said, I found this on the website. They have this little device and they measure your ear vibrations and they give you a little device that vibrates at a certain resonance and helps you concentrate. And the guy said, oh, what's that website? They're looking. They just, you know, they're entrepreneurs in the market, spiritual marketplace, that are ready to hook them up to anything that they can take their money and do something with them. But not, you know, what's something that's the teaching that Srila Prabhupada gave is you take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and then there's no coming back. You just, you go there, and you stay there, because you're fully satisfied. From drishtvandavartate, there's a higher taste from that experience, and there's shelter there. But there's no shelter, you have to come back. So many other examples. I'll give one other example. I was at Washington University, St. Louis, made a presentation that I've made before on stress management, because it was exam time. A spiritual perspective. The beginning part was just standard stress management stuff. Got a little bit into the spiritual stuff, and the end was Maha Mantra, and they passed out beads. At the end, one person who had never been there raised his hand, an undergraduate black student raised his hand and said, can I have a copy of that? I said, you want a copy of the whole PowerPoint? He said, no, just that slide. It was the Maha Mantra with Radha and Krishna. I said, sure, I'll make sure you get a copy. And then a Chinese student, something. You know, it's just people that had never been there. They're searching. They want. And they're willing to set aside other things for that. It's because I've been doing this for a number of years, and I can tell you, it's different now than it was the past couple decades. Yeah.
Do you also attribute this to them having an open mind?
Yeah. I'm not a sociologist, so you know, I'm sure there's something about cycles of, you know, because a lot of what they say is, I look at what my parents have and I go, yuck. They don't, you know, like, more or less. You know, I see they have stuff and I see they're not happy. I see that they're not really contributing to the quality of life. And I know that's making them not happy. And it's true. Somebody else was sharing with me, somebody that their father is very successful, and he has either a book or a website or a seminar thing he goes around and does, and he's calling it gross national happiness. Because the gross national product of goods and services is not making people happy. And it's like all kinds of research is out there that shows the more you have isn't making you more happy. And people are realizing it statistically and experientially. So they're looking for alternatives. You know, they got up the mountain and, you know, it smells bad. It's not fresh air. So they want something that's more pleasing, more satisfying to the heart. And they're looking. And there should be at least the opportunity of guidance. In my experience is when there's guidance, they like it. And there are groups of young American devotees that are doing this more and more. I just found out about another one. That, you know, they have like, you know, a dozen young American fellows that are like looking for, you know, the opportunity to give this to other people. That wasn't happening before for quite some time. And it's wonderful. Now, that's not the only constituency that should receive Krishna consciousness, but that's a very important constituency that should be reached. And I want to help that happen. Because if it happens in a few places, that expression, the rising tide lifts all boats, that's what's going to happen. People will become inspired. You know, you'll become inspired when you see this thing happening. In our temple, there's two brahmacharis that have been there for some time, and that's all they do is distribute books, right? Part of some party.
Yeah, he's traveling to Chicago.
Okay. Anything else? Yes. I can always count on you for a question, at least one.
I don't think I have a very clear idea of what does it mean to please Krishna. I think I have an idea of what does it mean to displease Krishna, but I'm not very clear on what does it mean to really please the spiritual master Krishna.
You said the last part of your sentence really fast, and to please the spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati katopi. You know that verse, and you know what it means. So, you have a son. I've noticed. So, what's pleasing to the father in relation to the son? Answer that question, and they think you have the answer to the other question. And that has the answer to the first question. Because Krishna is pleased when his devotees are pleased, and his devotees are pleased when he sees that those who are in their care are making spiritual advancement. And how to make spiritual advancement is receiving the mercy that comes from the person that wants to see them, and that mercy comes through instructions. So they're taking the instructions to heart. Not just, you know, dutifully, but taking them to heart. You know, fumingly and happily taking up instruction. Now I can imagine something that would please you very much in relation to your son in regard to instructions. That maybe one day he'll hear what you say. Maybe one fine day will come. And oh, how pleasing would that be. And not only hear what you say, but smile and say, yes. And do it. And smile. And say, I hope you're pleased. And you'll go, wow, what happened? What'd you have for breakfast? When you see that your son is developing character and nice qualities, it's very pleasing. Not just obedience, but these other nice things, then you're very pleased. Okay. So let's have a little more kirtan while the prasadam thing is getting ready. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai.